Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck, and tonight Kip DeKnol is my guest. Kip is the author of Zen and the Art of Mind, the Midlife Crisis, a title that fascinates me. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Kip DeKnol. Hello, Kip.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm good.
Jumped into the technology here. I've been playing along with the soundtrack that was on here, you know, for the last 10 minutes as they were keeping us occupied, waiting. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm just wondering if listening to your voice, I'm wondering if you have your sound of your computer turned down.
I did turn that off, and I've got my phone turned up. I've got
okay.
It set. Oh, that works better.
That sounds good. That sounds good. Okay. So I'm excited about discussing your book.
Well, yeah. It's been quite the process, and been very exciting to actually follow through, and it's... been something I've always wanted to do, not necessarily that title, not necessarily that subject, but life just developed, you know.
Yeah.
Suddenly there I am. I was actually always a fiction writer. That's what I always imagined, that if I was going to write, that's what I would do. And I wrote short stories, starting when I was 7 years old, and periodically on a pretty regular basis all the way up through into a first marriage. And then I took a long break from not writing, or a long break from writing and playing music. And was very distracted by life and family and running a construction business. And I reached a place where the passion had to come out. The stories were there, and I started writing again.
Wow! Well, it sounds like you did a lot of journaling too along the way.
Well, along the way I did, but literally for 20 years, I barely wrote a thing. Hardly ever played music. Just really was a guy in a pickup truck, making phone calls, constantly trying to arrange having, you know, big additions built and manage a bunch of employees and a heavy-duty cash flow that was always very critical on Friday, whether or not I was going to make payroll. And the stress was pretty mind-blowing. And, you know, some people would probably call it a nervous breakdown.
But you call it a midlife crisis.
You know, I'm not even sure crisis is the right word for it. It was just an embracing of, well, it was a decision that really, if I continued at the rate that I was going, there was a good chance, you know, a heart attack was going to happen or something fairly serious. In fact, actually, that there was such a traumatic health issue. But I made the decision first and that I really needed to change my life pretty radically. It started with a men's retreat and very intensive initiation, weekend-long process with a group called the Mankind Project. And I came out of there very committed to making my life work again, but incorporating writing into it. And that worked for a little bit. I started my blog, and I started a blog on construction. But things fairly, you know, I feel the universe pretty much directed me to really step away from a lot that I was doing, close my business down, and as a to fill that void, I just more and more was picking up my pencil and scribbling in my journal and writing blogs and starting to play more music.
And when exactly did that take place for you?
This was winter of 2008, I had a house with a subprime mortgage. That was definitely a overwhelming burden. We decided we really needed to sell that, and out of that, decided my wife at the time and I decided we needed to go in some, you know, go to two different homes. Once we had sold our home, and life just kind of unfolded in a way I hadn't expected, hadn't planned. I think it felt like all the crisis was ahead of time, and once making the decision or sort of beginning to open up and say, okay, you know, I can't do what I was doing, I need to change, then things just kind of smoothed out and took the course that they needed to take. I started following my intuition a lot more than what I should do or what's the right thing to do, and, you know, really all of those decisions about doing the right thing with a capital R hadn't really worked very well. So I decided to start working with a capital I and follow intuition. And the capital I, that's kind of interesting because, you know, there were people who were hurt by it and who really saw me as being very selfish. But I maintain that I probably would not be able to take care of anybody else were I not to take better care of myself. And so that's been the process of the last 4 years. And
we can't make everybody happy, that's for sure.
No, we can't. And I think it's the hardest thing to look at, you know, the place in your life and decide that the people who are really counting on you, you're going to have to let them down. And it's either that or if I'd had a heart attack, I might have, the insurance policy would have kicked in and maybe it would have been,
that's true.
Be okay. But I'm here, I'm healthy, and life is really good.
Oh, that's great. You know, it's you hear that echo kick?
Slightly.
It's not bad. Okay.
No.
Well, I can live with it. What was the moment that you, was it the men's group that sort of urged you to make these big changes?
I think that was the place that I really needed, you know, I really recognized that I had to make a change, that things really weren't working. It was an interesting process, and it goes back, which is what the book really does, is it goes not in different details, but it goes all the way back 25 years or so. I took the EST training, which then became the Forum. It was real big in the 70s.
Right.
And that was also a two-week weekend intensive that's famous for that they wouldn't let you go to the bathroom when you felt like you needed to go to the bathroom. And, you know, they delayed. You weren't supposed to eat all day long. And
It kind of broke you down, huh?
Well, the interesting thing was it broke a lot of people down. I was 20. I was in my late 20s, mid-20s, and I had a very unique instant family with a child, a baby, and a stepdaughter who was already a teenager. So it was very curious. I'd taken on a lot of responsibility, and here I am in my mid-20s or late-20s, and I find myself in this room, and I watch all these people who were breaking down and really powerful stories and very moving situations that people, you know, were really revealing about themselves. I'd never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. And I had a really great childhood that was just so perfect that mm-hmm. it was hard to really imagine that there was any problems. And I remember thinking, you know, they reached this point, the lady saying, you know, you think your life works, but it really doesn't. And, you know, just like they're really trying to turn you around 180 degrees. And I said, you know, and I finally decided, okay, you know, I'm going to step into the fire here, and I'm going to be one of these people who ends up, you know, sobbing and finding my life is, you know, hasn't worked. So I raised my hand and I stood up, and the woman looks at me and she says, so, you know, what's going on? And I said, well, I really think my life's been working. And she looked at me and she said, you really do? I said, yeah, you know, I don't really feel like I have any big problems. You know, I mean, what I have are manageable and, you know, we're getting along.
Uh-huh.
And I was braced and ready. And she said, well, that's great. Sit down. And I sat down in this like shock of partly disappointment and partly like, you know, a little bit of smugness. But I realized that I must be so messed up that I don't even know what my problems are. I don't even know that I have any problems. Mm-hmm. So for the next 20, 25 or 30 years, then I started working on, so what are these problems? You know, why don't I know these things?
I think I just dropped Kip. I hope he calls back. It's a fascinating story about, I think he'll probably realize that he is dropped off the call. And now I don't have an echo, so maybe when Kip calls back, the echo will be gone. Let's just see.
I had a friend call in, and I tried to disconnect him, and I got disconnected you at the same time. all this technology.
Well, guess what? The echo's gone. The echo, okay. I think, is gone. Anyway, go ahead.
Good. It served a purpose.
Always serves the purpose, yeah.
There it is. The universe always delivers what we need. So I spent these next 25 years trying to figure out what my problems were, and I took on, I created another family, and I took on a, after separating from the first family, I created a second one, and I created a construction business and created this really, really chaotic life and found lots of problems inside myself. Mm-hmm. But had this incredible determination to persevere and overcome and solve solutions and fix things. And the construction business ended up being kind of so chaotic that, we were running six jobs at once and, you know, a huge cash flow. And I was just nuts running around all the time. And people were, and most of the time it was, you know, there was more money needing to go out than I ever had. And that snowball effect that you keep taking taking on more jobs and this optimism that, well, the next job will go great, pay a lot of money, and then I can pay off some of this old stuff. And it becomes a really, really vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I had a lot of friends and colleagues saying, you know, you're nuts. I don't know how you can get up in the morning and face your day.
Ooh.
And for several years, I kept on just laughing and shrugging that off and saying, well, I'm strong. You know, I'm perseverance. I have lots of talent. I have lots of brains. I'll figure this out. And, you know, it'll just, if I just tweak this or I fix that, you know, it'll all work out.
Right.
So I finally took this men's group, which was back to your original question. I'm
yeah.
taking the liberty of recognizing we have nearly 2 hours to fill, so
<That's> funny.
I can tell the longer stories. So I finally went to this weekend, and it culminated on a Saturday afternoon with a lot of sleep deprivation and food deprivation and a lot of different kinds of processes that took us through a whole sequence of events that were, you know, kind of around the hero's journey idea.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally reached this place where they take each individual man and they really, you know, there's the same situation that I had faced with the S training 20 years ago, 20 years
mm-hmm.
before, of them really going, so what's not working in your life? You know, let's really change the dynamic here. And, you know, how, what do you need? And I had the same dilemma that I couldn't break down the way all the other men in the group were doing. They each had their turn. They each went through this huge transformation and breakdown process. And I was too tightly bound up in myself, so together that, you know, I just could not let go and scream, cry, really
mm-hmm.
allow that life sucked.
mm-hmm.
And that too then became a really powerful place. The next day, they did a little process that you know, was really focused on the little boy. And I got this image of this little 3-year-old boy who was had a watering can, and it was me. I remember the day really, really well. And I had this watering can, and I was trying to get all the water wet around this little wading pool before the sun dried it off.
Uh-huh.
You know, what a silly task, but what a zen task. You know, what a real focused in meditative, just get the water, just pour it around and keep trying to get it wet, and the sun was, you know, doing its thing, and we were having this dance. And I was really, I remember just being really happy and content
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, focused and really at peace. And I was looking at where the pictures are in the photo album, I got to say I was probably about 3 years old. And so I kind of got in touch with that little boy, and I remembered that place. And then I thought about the kid who started writing and
mm-hmm.
had played guitar, even though people said, well, you know, my people in my family were like, you can't sing. You can't play guitar. Go into the other room. But somehow I kept wanting to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the way through high school and into college and into that first marriage, I was playing a lot of music and I was writing a lot of stories. And I had this whole vision of being the next Jack Kerouac, my hero.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow, I know how now, but some, you know, life just really plucked me over the head, and I made choices about family and a different kind of work to pay the bills and got completely sidetracked.
That's not a good story of, especially because the story of lost creativity in our society. I mean, people don't even think they're creative anymore.
Well, and there's a lot of that not happening, and we're also really raising, you know, a couple of generations now that are, you know, it's all about perform to the test.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a kindergarten teacher who is telling me that, you know, they're assigning homework at kindergarten, and the kids have so much to do in the curriculum during the week that only Friday, if they've gotten everything done, are they able to have colors, crayons and color.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No block playing.
Wow.
No exploration. No, just being and discovering.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with computer games and stuff, too. For their relaxation.
Right. And that's, again, a rote kind of thing. Very focused in, but there's a goal orientation, and it's not a whole lot of creativity to figure it out. It's pushing buttons and making things happen. But I think there's a real concern in our society at large at how we're raising our kids.
Mm-hmm.
There's no neighborhood play like there used to be when I was growing up.
Yeah.
You know, where you're hanging around throwing a football until way after dark, you know, and then kind of, you know, feeling what it's like to be going home through the woods in the dark, you know, what an experience. And you know, we don't let our kids do that anymore because we're afraid somebody's, with reason, we're afraid somebody might jump out of the woods and take them. So we're not letting our kids play and explore and discover. And I think there's a real loss in that.
Yes.
So I'm trying to raise one small voice talk about how I was affected by my childhood, which was a really fantastic, very creative childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Given, you know, lots of love, huge amount of support, blessed with opportunities to do things. A wonderful, loving, close family that had just encouraged so much creativity. But I was the only boy among four sisters, right smack in the middle. And a lot of my writing is looking at the expectations that I put on myself given the environment that I was raised in of a 50s, male, bring home, you know, a male, the father commutes into town, does his thing, comes home, you know, supporting the family, the mother's at home, creating this home life. And then my father was very successful, and really a great man and a hard act to follow. And, he did the best that he could with the tools that he had in his life, and he loved as much as he knew how, given the upbringing that he had, and, you know, did better than how he was raised. I still was left with a very, not a clear picture of how to accomplish. I could see the goals, but I really was completely at a loss despite a really great education. I was at a loss of how to achieve those goals.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of running a construction company was great. The day-to-day handling all of the aspects of it, just blindly thinking, well, I'm smart, I can do it, as opposed to, oh, you need an office manager, you need a salesman, you need a project manager, uni, you know.
So you were doing it all by yourself, huh?
I was doing it all by myself. Absolutely. On my own. And hiring, firing, and a lot of wishful thinking and prayers. You know, it was, nobody can fault me for trying.
Oh my gosh, it's such a, I know it's a huge, my husband does home construction work, you know, or had, now he's back to teaching. But I know what that is like because he thought he could do it all too. And it was hard to find people who would work, number one. And so he actually got a lot of very disturbed, mentally disturbed people to work for him. And that was an interesting experience, you know.
Yeah. Well, up here in Vermont, you got to, you know, to be building houses outside in the wintertime, you got to be a little mentally disturbed.
How long have you been in Vermont?
I've been in Vermont for 22, 25 years, something like that, 23
right,
or 4.
Right. Well, that's a beautiful place, a great sense of community there, huh?
It's really great. We had got hit pretty hard by Hurricane Irene. I, in particular, had suffered no damage in the slightest, but live right beside the river that raged through quite a few towns nearby. And I know a lot of people whose lives have been completely turned upside down.
Yeah.
And it's pretty dramatic and makes you really count your blessings. And there's been a wonderful, you know, the community has risen together and bonded in a really special way everybody's pitching in and helping and donating stuff and pitching, you know, helping to clean up, temper down, slow down a little bit. A lot of people are back to normal life, but it's been quite an experience.
I know, we have a little bit of that too. Irene didn't hit as much as a hurricane that hit about a week later. Oh my gosh. I think Irene hit some people. It was very strange how these two storms seemed to hit randomly at different homes. Like one home would be devastated and the house next door was completely untouched. So strange.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think we find the same thing here of everybody pitching in to help, and it's quite heartwarming to see all the people coming together. Do you have an Occupy Vermont kind of movement there?
Well, yeah, Burlington, Vermont's pretty progressive.
There's
a lot of people. I'm considered a Flatlander, which actually, Kate, I grew up outside Philadelphia, so I know your area. Quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of Flatlanders who have moved up here and settled, and a lot of liberal politics. We're very, very proud of our delegation in Washington. And
That's Bernie Sanders is my hero.
Oh, you know, we get to see him all the time. He is so accessible that I've had quite a few conversations with him. We're in a plane together, and you know, he's just and Pat Leahy too is somebody you can walk right up to on the street, and it's small enough of an area that you you know, it's not unusual to bump into these guys. Anyway, it's very progressive, and so Burlington's a very vibrant, exciting town, kind of like State College down there in Pennsylvania, Berkeley in California, Cambridge, Mass. It's one of those real vibrant, exciting, very culturally alive towns. I think there's probably six or seven towns that are having the Occupy marches on last Saturday, and I think there's a bunch more happening on this Saturday.
Well, we have a whole contingency down in our town. Our mayor has allowed the kids to Well, whoever is interested, about 7,500 people actually camped out right at the police station, and the mayor has said they can stay there at least until January. Of course, we have a very progressive mayor, very progressive, and just love the guy completely. Yeah, it is great.
It's good. I know it's a movement that has to happen, that voices have to be raised, and I'm glad to see people are finally, you know, doing it.
It's the kind of a thing. Yeah, it's the kind of thing where people are actually feeling a sense of community all over the world with everybody. It's a global community, a global family.
Yep.
I don't know if you saw the video I made of a homeless man outside of the Occupy Lancaster in Pennsylvania area. And,
I did not actually see. I saw that you had made it, and I didn't get a chance to look at it.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that he was always fearful, or at least ever since he's been homeless for the last 3 months or so, he was very fearful of being arrested for vagrancy. You know, he had a lot of fears. He had had a good corporate job, but lost everything. You know, I don't think he had good health insurance, and then he lost his home in a foreclosure thing. He basically was homeless suddenly, and could happen to anybody, really, in our kind of shaky economy. And this did happen to him in 2008 when all that stuff was going down. Well, he says in this film that he feels a sense of community with the people there. And, you know, he's not afraid of being arrested anymore because he has a place to live. It's really quite moving. Well, then I put this up on YouTube, you know, and all these people are writing and saying, why doesn't he get a job?
Yeah,
it's like no compassion whatsoever for anything. It's sad.
Yeah. It is. Well, I've been looking for a job. It's really, really a hard time.
Yep.
There's, you know, the economy just came to a walloping stop, and you know, there's great resumes, and the whole way of applying for jobs is so different now, doing it on the internet, you know, trying to figure out a way to stand out and you know, get a straight 9-to-5 type of a job. And there's just so many people who are looking that it's not happening quickly for a lot of people.
No, you know, I don't think the movement is exactly all about finding a job or not finding a job. I think that it really is about, I mean, it certainly is about the corporate takeover of America and how people aren't as caring about their employees and blah, blah, blah. But I think suddenly there's something changing in the air, and that maybe a new ethic is being born.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. This is my version of what I'm seeing that the December 2012 is all about. You know, this is a spiritual conversation that we've built it as that, and I'm definitely excited by these transformations that people are having, and really, you know, kind of changing their own lives, doing exactly what I've done.
Yes.
I'm not unusual. I'm just a little more vocal about it. I'm not shy of the trauma that's led to my making a change, or the, you know, I own my responsibility and the problems that I caused other people by making the choices that I've had to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to hold that up to people as an example, just to say, we all mess up. We're all human beings. We can hurt people. And if we're not careful, if we're not careful and we're not conscious of it, you know, then real damage gets done. But if I can sit there and I can say, whoa, wait a minute, actually, you know, that's not a really great way to be, and I can make a change, then that's something worth talking about. I don't think it's as effective of a conversation if I'm just sugarcoating the whole thing. So I'm brave enough to put my laundry up there, and I'm trying really hard not to hurt anybody else in the process of it, which is a fine line to walk. But that being said, there's a lot of people. You know, you had the experience that I had of the Transformational Authors contest, and how many people are telling, you know, different variations of the same story. It's very
exciting.
Yeah,
that looks fascinating to me how pretty much everybody is. But there's different ways of telling it, the story. And
absolutely.
Yeah, it's an interesting, it's almost like maybe a kaleidoscope that once these things are put together, formulate a beautiful, beautiful picture that all makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, each person's story, we're all really saying the same kind of a thing. And Shakespeare, we're saying the same thing Shakespeare said, and Nietzsche, and the Bible, and... you know, all the way through history, you know, the same basic idea is strong about following your heart, living with integrity, not hurting other people, you know, and trusting in that there's a larger process going on, that there's a universe that, you know, is guiding us. It's all the same story, but
I know
it's different with each and every single one of us. So you can never have enough stories. You know, everyone has its own unique twists, and that's what's fascinating. I don't think anybody's, you know, better than anybody else. It's just different stories that are going on. So I'm having a wonderful time. What I thought was going to be spending my life making up stories and writing fiction, and instead, I find the reality is much more fascinating.
Oh, I agree. And, of course, you can make those things into fiction, but what the heck? They're saying here in the chat room, we have some people here in the chat room saying that, you know, how the whole... the slogan of the Occupy movement is the 99% versus the 1%. Well, there's this gentleman who said, let me think of his name here. Let me get it. Sean Come, C-O-M-E, says that we are all the 100%. Isn't that cool?
That's true. That's something I've been hearing the last couple of days. And
I think that really makes a lot more sense. Why just separate people out and make them into some kind of enemy, you know?
That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. We're all just trying to get along, make our way in the world, not hurt any other, you know, hurt other people. And, you know, some are going to do a lot better than others. I think for me, it's less about the 1% individuals are, you know, it's like I keep thinking about Paul McCartney and what a life he has had where, his, you know, and there's other people like Michael Jackson and all these folks who have been godlike and revered and walk into a room and... you know, they are the center of attention no matter where they go and what they do. And their life is distorted. And it's very, very hard to keep a sense of the rest of the world when you have that kind of attention put on you. You know, no matter how great a heart you have. And, you know, amazing that there are some people who can do it. And they're, you know, the point of that is that the 1% that we're identifying – you know, it's just a little crazy when, you know, $3 million would set you, you know, would make anybody really comfortable for life. And so somehow they got to have 30 million or 300 million, you know, and feel compelled to continue to get more and more and more. And mm-hmm. I think that's the sad thing. And that can be just as true of, you know, of just about any of us, that we can be caught up in that mindset that says, you know, it's just not enough. It's just, you know, what happens if this doesn't happen? Or, you know, what happens if I lose it or I get hurt or all of these things? You know, I just got to hold on to this, you know, and get as much as I can wrapped around me. You know, that's the sad thing.
And it is sad that, that we are separating people out at all.
Yep.
Because you're right that there's a lot of fear with all that money. And also with these beliefs that are generating about the wealth that these people have, people are actually becoming or developing false beliefs about money.
Yeah, well, there's just an emphasis.
I was going to say, we have a 603 area code here. Let me just bring them on.
Okay.
Hello there, 603.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
And who is this?
I'm sorry?
And who is this?
My name is Joanne.
I thought that was who it was.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Great. I'm awesome.
I was just considering this whole conversation, particularly regarding what's happening in our economy. It's really easy, like, to talk about this, and I know Kip is trying really hard to make a change, but how can we affect all people? I mean, how do you reach people? A lot of people really feel stuck, and I think what Kip has to say is an amazing way of looking at life. But unfortunately, I don't think everyone has reached this point, and I think it's vital that they do.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea of 100% versus 99%. Just wondering, I guess what you're doing right now is fantastic, enlightening the world. I don't know how far out we reach, but the message is loud and clear that we need some changes in our culture. So I'm wondering how your show and your interview with Kip can affect the world, or our country.
Good question. I think that we are continuing the conversation here on this show every week. And, you know, then I feel like it helps me feel transformed to keep on transforming and you know, it keeps my mind very energized. And just having conversations with people like Kip and with you and with the people in the chat room and with people all over the world just makes me feel very connected.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I think what he's
about you?
What he's done is great. I don't know how to get it out there any better than what you're doing.
Well, Kip, are you going to be self-publishing your book?
Yes, and what has just transpired in my head in terms of the book is finished, and it's been looked at by several people that have passed on it, but with some enthusiasm, and some people have read it and brought tears in my eyes with the good things that they've said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so yeah, I feel that, and it kind of goes back to what Joanne was saying, who we know each other pretty well, and for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so pleased and honored, Joanne, that you're here. And if each of us, I guess all I'm trying to do is show that there's a fine line. Some people say I'm really brave for exposing myself and giving details. And, you know, and I joke about, well, there's, you know, not much difference between bravery and foolishness. It just sort of depends on the outcome, how people see it. And I think the important thing is that what I'm trying to do is just go, you know, rather than being hurt or hurting other people by being honest, I find that more people are honest with me, and more people mm-hmm. are open, and more people are sharing. And so, you know, what I'm doing is being moved and channeled. It's, you know, there's a higher purpose that's guiding me to say, stand up and be counted. And it's not in an ego place of, you know, I want to get to the 1% place. It's mm-hmm. that exactly. I want to emphasize that we're 100%, that we're all here trying to get along and do the best we can and help each other along the way where we can. Mm-hmm. And I think the more people start saying that from every corner, I think the better off we're going to be. You know, back to being in Vermont. I love that this conversation, this spiritual conversation, is going on more and more at the dinner tables, at restaurants, at the grocery store. I can bump into people who talk about past lives, you know, while we're picking our cornflakes. And it's just fascinating. And it's true, though. The language is becoming more and more common. And that's, you know, that's this transition that's happening, that our world is really radically changing, whether we say it's, you know, the Mayan calendar or the solar system. You know, our solar system at the date of 2012 is going to be at the furthest point from the center of the Milky Way, and there's a gravitational thing that's happening. You know, whatever reason we give to it, I just mm-hmm. think that we're all having a better conversation now than we did, you know, 40 years ago when Joanne and I were being raised in Nether Providence, you know, by our particular families that had their, you know, their real strict guidelines. Yeah, this is the way you're supposed to be.
Well, I think you are very brave.
I'm very brave.
Putting this out there, and I think we as a society are ready for this. I think we all inside our hearts believe that this is what's going on and know what we want for ourselves, but we don't know how to get it. And I think this is a great effort to get people to look at themselves more deeply.
Yeah, and you can't do it alone. You know, Joanne, you affect me, you help me, your support is huge. That, all right, we've had some phone conversations and emails back and forth that, you know, I get the support that says, you're doing a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we feed each other. You know, it's a different kind of food than what we're used to.
Well, there's so many people out there who feel the same, but just don't know who to reach out to or how to get the help or how to figure it out. And I think this book is fantastic, a fantastic way to cross that bridge.
Joanne is one of the few people who's actually read it cover to cover.
Oh, that's really great. I have read bits and pieces, if not more of it, or I've read more, you know, I'm reading it, let's put it that way, and I like it very much.
Well, thank you.
I actually read the first draft, so that was doesn't count.
I'm sure it's changing, right? It's evolving.
It is. But actually, I was going to say, there's a when you asked about self-publishing, there's a whole companion piece to this, which is that I've written a lot of songs that have the same theme. And so I've got a band, and we recorded most of it, and I decided that centering on this conversation that we were going to have, Kate, that I created a Kickstarter program, which will come out in the next day or two, where I'm asking for people's financial contribution to help us get the CD finished in a really high quality way. And, and so then I'm gonna have a book, and I'm gonna have a CD that really, you know, get this message out there about just the line I'm really holding on to these days is dare to sing your dare to sing from the top of your lungs. And the more I'm focusing in on doing this, you know, the more there's a momentum that's coming along, which made me, you know, reach out to you, Kate, to say, hey, you know, let's have a conversation I don't know if we call this the radio, the telephone, or the computer, but
it's a combination of all three.
But it motivated me that, you know, here's a place, you know, to just kind of it creates the gel, you know, there's just all this stuff is going into this stew, and it's coming out with something that I am pretty excited about, really packaging and having it available. So I've spent the last 3 days working on my website, working on this Kickstarter program. And if,
tell us your website, Kip.
It's kipdumal.com. K-I-P.
Gotcha. It all runs together, of course. Yeah.
Exactly. All small letters. And if you just Google Zen in the Art of the Midlife Crisis, it'll come up.
Well, I'm going to do this right now. I'm putting this in the chat room. Is it www.kipdumal or not?
Yes, that works as well.
Okay.
I can't see how to get to the chat room.
Did you register with Blog Talk Radio?
I thought I had in the past, because I've been on your, I've been on, listened to you a few times. Oh, yeah, I got to sign in. There we go. It would help if I signed in.
I spelled your name incorrectly, so I'm going to try this again.
K-I-P-D-E-M-O-L-L.
I will get there. Well, this sounds really neat. I was reading over in the New World Library Facebook page that this combination of different, like the writing with the music, with the different kinds of technology, is really going to become very big in the future.
Wow. Well, that's good.
So what you're doing is what you're doing is right on.
Well, good. Good. It's a nice balance. And I'm in a dilemma. You know, I don't have income. I've been I had a real serious injury, and I've spent the last couple of years being supported by my father. And I'm now, you know, that's running out, and I've got to find a job, and I've got to find income. So I'm actually looking at a construction job, and in part it feels like a step backwards. But, you know, it's what needs to happen. It's part of the whole stew that's getting made up, out of which, you know, whatever is going to help me continue to keep putting forth what I'm trying to do, which is just raise a voice and hopefully get a lot of people to sing along with me. That's the goal of it. Whatever helps that along is a good thing. So.
Yeah. It is a good thing.
But I've been in a dilemma, Kate, because in reformatting my website, I'm also looking at, you know, after Christine Closure's telesummit, you know, and I've really had my eyes open to that as a great way to create, get the messages out there, and make a decent living doing those. And I'm actually looking at maybe doing telesummits for contractors. I've got all these ideas that are brewing around in a really big way. And conventional wisdom is that you want to separate all those businesses and, you know, create a website for each and every one of them.
Yeah.
And I am being moved to go the opposite way and just say, I'm Kip the Mall. I play music. I'm writing. I'm leading some construction. I'm writing a book on how to remodel your house and save your marriage while you're doing it.
Yeah.
And I might be a project manager for a construction company. It's just very interesting.
I understand exactly what you're saying, Kip, because it sounds like you sort of sound like me in that I have 10 million different interests.
Yeah.
I can't focus in on one thing because that one thing becomes boring to me after a while, basically.
Yeah. Well, you can be stagnant if you're totally too myopic, too focused on one thing. There's that risk. I'd love to just continue on just as I have been, sitting in my little room in a downstairs basement apartment, looking out over the woods and a river, and just write and talk to people on the internet all day. I could be really happy just doing that. but it's nice to have the stimulation to go, you know, today was a good day of that. I came out of my cave and I went up and, you know, had some sunlight and looked at a different view and got lots of inspiration. And so, you know, if I'm going to take this construction job and wear that hat for a little while, it's going to just kind of, well, it just keeps me in tune with everybody who's carrying a briefcase and going to work every day. It keeps us all in that 100% range.
Yeah, I like that 100% range. I'm totally into that.
Yeah, got to be the call word for everybody.
Yes, I think that needs to be the call word of the movement.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's the whole idea between 99 and 1% has to do with bringing light to the fact that people don't really like the fact that they bailed out the banks and didn't get anything for it, you know. And that has to be recognized for what it is.
Absolutely. It's huge. I was forced to sell my house, and I was lucky enough that I could sell it as opposed to, you know, being in a 3 or 6 months later, it could have been devastating, and I'd be in this situation where they couldn't sell it for enough to pay off the mortgage. But I got out of it with my freedom and cleared a lot of debt. There's a lot of people who were so much less fortunate, but I still, you know, I suffered from a subprime mortgage, and there was no. And at one point, actually, just as I closed up my company, it was very interesting. Chrysler was getting, it was right exactly at the moment that Chrysler was getting the bailout. And I had a Dodge truck, which was owned by Chrysler.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't make the payment on it. And, you know, and I said, look, you guys, you're getting bailed out. You know, let's work something out where I can, you know, reschedule the payments or get a, you know, I was trying, I can't remember right now, but I was trying to be creative about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they couldn't budge. It was, you know, some little menial guy in a department wearing a headset like I'm wearing right now who had no authority, couldn't do a thing about it. And yet their company was getting completely bailed out and are now doing great because the government gave them a break and gave them the opportunity to fix themselves. And I didn't have that opportunity.
I think it's really great this is happening because it really is huge that people are finally saying, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This is not cool.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, too many people are hurting.
Yeah, that's the point right there.
And you're, the struggles are just to pay the fuel bills up here is what a lot of people I know are having to deal with right now. And, we're heading into the cold season and the price of liquid gas, LP, has doubled.
Oh, my gosh.
Since last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that has, nobody's income is doubling and nobody's, able to, a lot of people can't make that difference. And they're going to have to do, really tighten belts to get through the winter.
Oh, dear.
And there's more and more of us who are having to tighten our belts and are living in, smaller houses than we ever thought we'd have and different circumstances and driving cars longer and, really recognizing that it's not the dream that we were told we were going to have.
Yeah. But the dream, the real dream would be to become independent of oil and to somehow really simplify our lives so that we can continue to live in a community of like-minded people, really, because that's what's going to happen. I mean, everybody seems to be thinking along these lines all of a sudden faster than ever before.
That's right.
Well, because of the terrible, because of the fact that our Earth is at stake.
Yep. And we have to all behave differently. It's Joanne's right. We've all got to wake up and start really looking at what are the important values in our life, and having five homes is when there are other people who are homeless. It doesn't really make sense.
No, it doesn't, does it?
And I think more and more people are beginning to look at that, and I think that's why it's there's more and more people who are having trouble keeping their one home or just paying the rent that are looking at that big picture and saying, it's not fair that we've got this whole crust of a population that has no clue at how hard so many people are working. They just don't see it. So it's really good to have so many people standing up and declaring that it's time for change.
It is a beautiful thing. It is just, I also went to see Thich Nhat Hanh over the weekend in New York City. And also did go down to the Occupy Wall Street site. It was a really neat experience. Thich Nhat Hanh is nearly 90 now, and he has these beautiful monks and nuns that are with him that are all saints. He is a saint. For all those listening, he's like the Vietnamese Buddhist monk who was exiled from Vietnam for his stand against the war in Vietnam back in the 60s. And he's never, I don't think he's ever been allowed to go back. So anyway, he was very, very gentle, and he said this thing that really penetrated my mind that had to do with the fact that a person cannot be happy if they don't have compassion.
if they don't see that people are suffering in the world, if they don't see or have that deepness of understanding that we all suffer. We, in fact, suffering is a part of life, and we can, should not or need not shun it, because it is a part of the cycles of life. So when we are suffering ourselves, and if we mindfully go into that deep place where we are feeling 100% instead of resisting it with whatever, you know, whatever, drugs, alcohol, technology, video games, you know, not TV, you name it, and you're not really going deeply into your suffering with all of these distractions. But he didn't go into that kind of detail. He just said that people who do not who do not have compassion are not happy. So when you have the compassion for the other people in the world who are homeless, and if you have a social consciousness, for instance, you are happy because you are feeling what it is like to be there too, because we are all one.
Yeah. One of my favorite metaphors is just simply rain and sunshine. You know, there are people who live in California who say, you know, another sunny day, or don't even notice it. And I think that balance of having rainy days where you hunker in and you know, sit and read a book, or, you know, whatever needs to be done, and then when the sun comes out, it's that much more powerful. Up here in the north, where winter is so bitter cold, I talk about the fact that we earn springtime. And when I lived in Pennsylvania, spring was nice. You know, beautiful blossoms, great, you know, always felt really good. But you come another 400 miles north and, you know, dealing with a lot more darkness, and then, you know, really bitter cold for longer time of the year.
Yeah.
When that spring comes around, it's amazing.
You know, oh, wow.
How happy people are when they're able to open their windows and, you know, take a jacket off and walk around in a t-shirt and bare feet. Oh, man. You know, you would never feel that if every day was a beautiful day.
Oh, and the change of seasons is just amazing.
Yeah, that's right. We're in the midst of it right now. Joanne, you're still there? Are you still on?
Actually, she dropped off a little while ago.
Okay. Well, you know, up here in New England, it's the fall foliage is absolutely peak right now in my neighborhood.
I bet it's beautiful.
Breathtaking. Absolutely, you're driving along and you just want to stop and look at a tree, and there's one after the next. It's really really amazing.
Well, people go up to see all those, you know, the changing trees all the time, don't they? They come up like a tourist attraction or something.
Oh yeah, it's huge. It's a huge attraction. It's a lot of the economy up here is based on good foliage. So there was a lot of fear when Irene happened. There was a lot of pressure, you know, not so much pressure, but a lot of support to send out the word that most of Vermont was in great shape, that they were so afraid of so many people, you know, just not deciding not to come. That we had to work hard to let people know it's nice up here.
Oh, I'm glad. Now, were you going to play some music for us?
Oh, I could get to that. You know, yeah, because I realize there's a technical issue about, I have no idea how this is going to sound. I tried calling a few people this afternoon to experiment between the phone mic and real mics and direct, what we call direct inputs of for the guitar and stuff. And so I have no idea what this is going to be like. But
well,
I
have somebody on the show recently who plays the flute, and that came out beautifully.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll give it a try here.
Okay.
And now all I got to do is figure out which song, and I'm going to turn my mic upwards so I don't blast with my voice and you can't hear the guitar. So I wrote a song in college days. Actually, I guess the first thing I should do is write the song after I have played the song, after I had done the men's group and moved out and came into my little place here where I live now. I picked up my guitar, started playing more and more, and I wasn't really expecting ever to write another song. I had about 20 or 25 or so from my early days, and that was fine. I had no expectation, and all of a sudden, this song just came pouring out in the space of one or two days, and it's called Broken Mirrors. Which really is kind of the best representation of the change that I went through.
Okay.
So the way I introduce it is that if you imagine somebody standing and looking at a mirror and they don't really like what they see, and they, you know, smash the mirror into pieces on the floor and take on a whole new, you know, decide to change their life, that's what this song is about. So stop me if it doesn't sound very good technically, but here we go. Can you hear the guitar like that?
Yeah, I hear it.
The fun thing about not playing with the band is that I get to do the songs very differently.
Yeah.
I'm never quite sure how it'll be. Who was that stranger standing just in front of me? Was that really someone I used to know? Shoulders stooped, he was no one I ever wanted to be. He looked so brave, but I know it was all just for show. It's all right, he can come around any night. I can't really see him anymore. He can stay in pieces on my floor. Been so long since I felt this free and clear on my own. Seems like I never felt this strong. Lions roar, and out of the songs I sing, you can hear it in this song. It's all fine, sunlight is on my mind. I can't let it be afraid anymore. Love can heal this heart so sore. I was talking so much I completely figured out, forgot how to sing the words. Seems like I used to work so very, very goddamn hard. And life didn't get easier, no matter how hard I try. Love dies quickly when you don't walk fast in the old backyard. And pain doesn't stop just because you cry. It's okay, learn to keep on anyway. I can't let it stop me anymore.
Chances come, make them turn out fine. Sing
songs. Right your wrongs. Stand out from the throng. Let the world know the score. If integrity is the price you have to pay, you're better off if you throw that luck away. If you listen too much to what other people say, you'll fumble excuses all the night and day. Tiptoe on the edge, don't ever fall. Explore the possibilities before you choose. Place moderation above it all. And color a rainbow instead of the blues. Take a knife. Cut out the strife. Take charge of your life. Walk through the door. Oh.
Hey, Kip, my phone just got dropped off, but I'm back.
Okay. I thought maybe I had dropped off, so.
I know. I thought, wow, I don't hear anything, and then I realized I had dropped off. That is just strange. Very strange.
Oh, these technological things.
I know. You got to love it.
Well,
that's the thing about all of this. Yeah, that's the thing about all of this is that it really is just really interesting to watch and to experience and to be in the flow. And there's really no reason to fear anything. I don't think.
Well, you know, we care and we want to have our, you know, put our best foot forward, and we want to have things matter. And I think that the danger is that then things are forced. And I think that's where the problems come in. And if,
yeah.
You know, I think the more we relax and go with the flow and laugh with, you know, our mistakes and our foibles, I think the better things come across.
Right.
And so we've got to be willing to make, willing to be seen as fools. Not that we make fools of ourselves, but it's okay that other people might not get whatever's going on at the moment, you know? And,
right.
You just got to be able to be feeling all right in any moment, and then that's going to make it okay for everybody else. I guess that's why I end up playing guitar, even though I was raised in an environment where it was like, you can't sing, don't do that. Ew. And
I'm glad you didn't listen to them.
And I still don't. My
no.
band gives me grief. The band gives me a lot of grief sometimes. We have a lot of fun. We really get along very well. They're largely in their 20s or just actually just making being 20. And so it's very interesting to be hanging out so much with these younger guys.
Well, that's great.
But we kid each other a lot and are often willing to be foolish. So when we play, it's really fun. And it's
you
nice.
Have a band, right? You have a band.
It's a band called Birchwood Coop. And I ended up that I needed to, I had to have a surgery this summer, so I did not book a lot of things. They were warning me that I would be out of commission for quite a while. And so you've got to be booking things 3 to 6 months in advance. And so we're not playing out a lot these days. I'm doing some
right.
solo stuff. And we're focusing in on finishing up this recording. And I've
wow,
been doing,
that's great.
Yeah. And doing a lot of writing stuff. So the music, it comes and it goes, depending on how I feel.
You had, you said, a life-threatening illness.
Well, I don't think that my life, I don't think I've been too threatened by it, but life-wise, but it's been quite a story, yeah. I was trying to get out of doing construction and kept going back because of needing some cash. And each time things got a little bit crazier. And finally, this 2 years ago this week, I was working on a roof, and I've been wearing a safety harness. But after lunch, I went up on a little lower scaffold and did not have a harness on. And the ladder kicked out, and I fell about 12 feet and had a straddle injury.
Oh. Ouch.
You as a nurse might understand the consequences.
Well, believe
so
me, I think anybody listening would just react the same way, like, oh, my God, especially a man.
It actually didn't hurt all that much at the time, and I chipped a bone in my palm of my hand. But the consequence was that I had to live for almost 2 years with a catheter and a tube in my belly hooked up to a bag. And so it was a very, it's the only time I've really been having a health issue. And
yes.
It was very, very profound experience to be, you know, basically, you know, handicapped in a lot of ways. I'm really aware. I had a 10-hour surgery on in June. And really felt miraculously healed. It was, I've got much, much more energy, much faster than what the doctors and nurses had led me to believe. I think a lot of that had to do with, they rebuilt my urethra.
Yes.
And, and I think that the fast recovery had to do with just really looking at the mind-body connection and really deciding
mm-hmm.
that it was not an accident. I sometimes jokingly say I jumped off the scaffold to really end my construction career. Really put me in a place where I needed to ask for help. I really, really had a very limited amount of energy for a long time, and
mm-hmm.
I tried to do the best I could, but people who were around me know that it really was a trying time for them, probably more than me.
When was your surgery?
In June.
Uh-huh.
So it's been 4 months.
Not very long ago, really. Very recent.
Well, I'm finding the adrenaline is kind of worn off, and now I do get tired after a few hours. But on the whole, it's been such a relief to be free in my movement without having to consider this little tube and pretty virtually pain free. It's been really a magnificent few months of really celebrating good health. I'm so fortunate that it's something that I could happen to me. It was devastating, and I could move beyond it. Where I have so much sympathy for people who have chronic, long term or terminal situations that it's a whole other ball game, whole other leg than what I had to go through.
Right.
Nevertheless, I've got a whole second book around that story, which is called The Pequel.
Oh, that's interesting. Is that written now, or is that completely...
It's largely written. I'm in the first book, Zen is in the Art of a Midlife Crisis, is all set to go to the publisher. The second one is a large series of essays that just need to be, collected and turned into a narrative. The whole thing's there. It's a great story about, a big fight with an insurance company. And then, of course, the whole second chakra, male sexuality issues, are pretty flamboyantly discussed.
Oh, good. That sounds like a great book, too.
Well, it's been an interesting process. There is no doubt.
Well, yeah, I don't mean to bring in something that you may not, or may not resonate with, but my dog Ulysses had his whole urethra rebuilt this year, and he is a whole new dog. He had cancer, but they were able to remove the cancer. I actually did 15 different types of intervention with natural interventions with him, and then finally he was able to have the tumor removed, and then the whole urethra was reconstructed. And he's a completely new being. He's like this radiating, loving being of light. So he's cancer-free, too, so everything's good with him.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but notice, that was a cool similarity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's all the same function. I definitely feel rejuvenated. The transformational workshop, Christine's program, was going on as I came home and was having my recovery, most immediate recovery. So it was really awesome to just be, sitting there listening to those conversations and not have anywhere that I could go even if I wanted to. I was really, really homebound. And then very quickly after that, within days, I was really walking around a lot and just ecstatic and exuberant with life. And so I finished up the book, and then I've got this whole second book idea, and I've been really, really taking charge. As I said in that song, taking charge of my life and walking through the door. Very excited to really appreciate the gift of good health. It's huge.
Oh, my heavens, it is. It is huge. And to have an appreciation for that, I'm sure having gone through what you have gone through, every day you every moment you must feel that appreciation.
I'm not good at every moment. There are times I'm, just having a good time or actually can be sitting there. When I do get tired, it's hard to remember that actually there's a reason for it. So I worry that I'm depressed and I get, but suddenly I can't move. And and then I wonder what's wrong with me. And then I think, oh, yeah, right. It hasn't been that long.
I know, you're still healing. It will take a good year to heal from kind of major surgery like that.
That's what they had told me, that I, you know, expect 6 months of really not being able to do a lot, not, you know, that they've made it hard to look for work in the meantime because, you know, I just knew there was such an open-ended process that was ahead of me that, you know, it's only since then that I've really, it's only the last 2 months that I've really been able to go like, okay, now I'm in life, you know, now I can really, really go forward.
Congratulations, really, congratulations,
yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's very fun, so, all right.
That's really, it's also very cool that you were doing a lot of your recuperation, listening to those great workshops that we both were privy to with the Christine Kozier Transformational Author Series. That was just wonderful.
Yeah, and a good connection. That's how you and I met. We haven't met face-to-face, but it's wonderful how the Internet can turn people into friends. You know,
I love that about the Internet.
Yeah, and I think that's a major tool in what's going on. And, you know, as we were speaking about this, you know, life change that's going on with everybody, you know, we're feeding each other through the Internet by having a conversation like this. The tools are being discovered as we speak that are changing the way we all relate.
Yes, it is.
So,
it's beautiful.
It is a fascinating process.
Do you have a closing song that you would like to play for us?
Oh, let's see. I'll stand back up and pull my guitar back. Let's see. I never was able to. Some glitch is going on with my computer. I couldn't see the chat section, so I don't have any idea if anybody's listening.
Well, don't forget it's archived. Not only that, but my sister is in the chat room with two other people, so we're good.
Right. Well, I know my daughter Zahn was listening at one point. She made a comment, and I think this might be one of her favorite songs, and I know it was my mom's favorite song. And it's pretty appropriate to the whole theme that we're talking about.
Good.
I better turn the mic up. Take time to tell you how I love our being here. Sitting all together with our faces aglow. Breath of your good feeling makes my worries disappear. The beats the tempo, I'm singing slow. Fire burns within me, you fan the flame. Brings a light to the night. Never want to be in the dark. Never want to feel cold. Most of all, I never want to lose you. Cause I'd be hard-pressed cold. What I would do without you. What I would do. There's been days when life's been generous. There's been days when life's haven't cared. Days long in temperatures, mediocrity. I could sit on top of mountains and reality. Of a fire burning within me where you fan the flame. Brings the light to the night. Never wanna be in the dark. Never wanna feel the cold. Most of all, I never want to lose inside me. What I would do without you.
I'm clapping with one hand. That's great.
Well, it's so funny to be talking so much and then suddenly pick up my guitar and launch into a song.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of get into the flow of one and then the flow of the other, so it's really odd to just suddenly start picking away. Took half the song to get into the groove. But
well, I'll be very anxious to hear about when your book is published. And do you have a format for, like, who's going to, who have you chosen to publish your book?
I'm probably going through the Create Space.
That's Amazon.
Like, yep. Seems like that, by all accounts, seems to be the easiest one to work with.
Yeah.
I did publish an ebook already of short stories, just to try, you know, the experimentation of how to actually format it. So that's available on Amazon, and it's called Small Change. And you can find it through either my website. You can actually, if you sign up and give me your email, you can get a free copy of the short stories.
Uh-huh.
So it's been
fascinating.
Yeah, it's been very cool to to format it, get it out there, realize that anybody can put a book out there. Really democratizes the whole way we speak and what messages are out there. It's like the music industry 10 years ago.
Did you actually? Are you actually formatting your book for Creative Space?
Yep. I'm a do-it-yourselfer, born and bred to a fault. And so, you know, that's a side business I figure I can get into, is helping other people format their works, because you have to know a little bit of code. It really seems, I'm thinking it's the wave of the future, is to self-publish. If you format it yourself, I'm afraid it seems like the publishing companies may go the way of the travel agents, that we're really able to, and record companies, to produce our own thing. And then the question is, how do you, you know, separate yourself from the masses? Or is there really a need to separate yourself from the masses? You know, if the message is strong, it will get out there. And if it's not, it's still just worthwhile by yourself to go through the process. So there's value.
Well, I'm learning a lot about book marketing lately, and I'm not going to bore our audience with that, but I surely would like to share with you what I've learned at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I'll definitely keep talking. Because the same thing, it's doing this kind of process. It's blogging, Twittering. And making, I heard a thing, the author Harbell, Hendricks, speaking about the fact you just got to show up.
I agree with that.
you know, nothing's going to happen if you don't put yourself out there and you don't stand up and say, you know, here it is, for better or for worse. Here we are. And
well, it's kind of like the fact that now everybody's a journalist these days. And we can see that it kind of all started with the terrible earthquake in Haiti about a year ago, where even before the major press moved in, there were these people showing, you know, the devastation on their cell phones. And now with the demonstrations with the Occupy movement in New York City, they showed that the police brutality was captured on a lot of cell phones. And people were talking about it, blogging about it, showing it on this great streaming video called Global Revolution. That is just an amazing channel. You can go globalrevolution.com, and they have pretty much 24/7 live streaming, constantly, you know, people capturing video of the demonstrations. So everybody's now a journalist. Now pretty much everybody can be an author. And, you know, like you said earlier, just a little bit ago, about the democratization of everything. I mean, really, the technology has allowed that for that to happen.
That's right. It's a wonderful thing. I have a friend who's got a great concept of the fact that for there truly to be world peace, we probably need to be more homogenous, that actually cultures create some division. And it's a sad, you know, a sad truth that it creates separation. You know, hopefully we'll all still have our different ways of dressing and self-expression. That is a cultural thing. But the internet is doing an incredible job of uniting people. You know, that makes it a world civilization. I mean, I'm of the belief that the concept of the United Nations is the right thing, and we really need to get rid of our borders and the competition between countries and cultures is going to be an important part of this whole change that we're talking about.
Yeah, I think that in the past we had the civil rights movement, the different types of, like, gay rights and you know, American Indian rights, but now it's really a human rights platform, a human rights movement. That is so exciting because we really are all striving 100%. To, yeah, the 100%. I think that really speaks to the movement better than the 99%. That's great.
Yeah. And it's like the movement itself, there seems to be a groundswell. I've heard that phrase over the last couple of days, and I'll bet it's catching on. It seems to be the right thing. Well, it's been my pleasure to get to know you, Kate.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kip, for being on the show. And we can certainly do this again. It's been, especially, you know, as time goes on and your other book gets published and all this and that. And I might call on you to format my book because I certainly need that service in the future. So,
Yeah.
Good.
I'm happy to do
Perfect.
It. I'd much rather do that than go back to construction. It's not safe for me.
Well, what you should do is put the word out that you are formatting books, because that's one thing that people need. If they're going to be publishing on that platform with Amazon, they're going to need their books formatted. I have personally no idea how to do it.
I agree with you. Things are really, really changing, and suddenly, you know, it can be that we never have to meet, and it's something that can happen in the space of an afternoon, and send it back to you and push the button and you're suddenly a published author. It's quite amazing.
Oh, you would love to be involved in people's success that way. I can see that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of celebrations. That's all a good thing.
Okay. Yeah. Keep you off the construction line here.
Yeah.
No, if you have to go back, you'll do fine.
Oh, yeah. Yep, just staying off scaffolds and wearing a safety harness.
Yeah, please do that, please.
Well,
go about your evening
alert.
Now. Thank you. And I'm going to be
all
playing
right.
again the music for Mother and Child by Klaus C.
All
Jensen.
Right.
Have a wonderful night. Thank you.
You too. Thank you. Have a great
night. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.